This is the continued meeting of the Pacifica National Board for March 20th. I'm now calling the meeting to order. Mary, would you please take the roll?
Grace Aaron.
Here.
Mia Bediaco.
Present.
Evelyn Bethune. Carolyn Burden will be late or maybe not at all, so she had let me know that. A.C. Bird.
Here.
Lisa Davis.
Lisa will be late.
Sherry Gendelman.
Yes.
Ambrose Lane.
Here.
Bob Lederer.
Here.
Mike Martin. Efia Nwangasa.
Here.
Margaret Prescott.
Margaret is in New York attending to her mom and won't
true.
Be
yes, that's right.
Joining us.
She will not be here. Sarv Randhawa.
He's going to be late.
George Ryder.
Here.
Rob Robinson.
Here.
Thomas Ruffin. Wendy Schrell. Bonnie Simmons.
Here.
Lori Taguma. Jack Van Aken.
Present.
Joe Wanzala.
Yes.
Yoshi Yamanaka.
Here.
Mary Berg, I am present. I will be leaving the call, though, shortly. Alani Hicks.
All here.
Thank you. Dan Siegel.
Here.
Nicole Sawaya.
Here.
Thank you.
Somebody just came on the call.
Yeah, that's Wendy.
Hey, Wendy.
Thank you. All right, we have quorum, and the roll is taken as of
okay. So, okay. So the business that carried over from March 20th, and I sent out the revised agenda. As I said, the executive director informed me that she does feel, in accordance with our contractual obligations, that she had been briefed, and the individual station reports won't be required. Tonight, she informed me that she felt up to date on many issues, and we can, of course, readdress anything at the Houston in-person meeting. And as I said before we were streaming, for those items where we do want the input of the Foundation Council, Dan Siegel, he has commitments to leave early, so I would like Dan... Did you get the agenda as well?
I'm sure I did, although I don't have it in front
okay.
of me.
Okay, I'm going to read the agenda, and then I will suggest what I think we really need your input on, and you may have a different idea about that. The agenda itself is that the coordinating committee report will be a total of 20 minutes. The director's inspection scheduling protocols, which is a motion that has been circulated, and I think that was 20 minutes as well. I have a motion. The other one is recording executive session motion. We might want your input on that, though I thought you commented at the last meeting. I have a motion for a motion to prevent the recording of any PNB, if any Pacifica employee, without their knowledge and consent. And then we have an update on the elections, 15 minutes, and an affiliates report, 15 minutes. So if I could, did you, Dan, receive the language or the motion on the protocols for directors' inspections?
Yes.
Okay. Did everybody on the PNB get that language, says Rob? Rob Robinson.
When was that from?
This afternoon. I'll send it out again. I've had some problems getting my emails to transmit, so I'll try sending it to the PNB again right now.
Okay.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
It's going to be a problem for those people who are not sitting in front of a computer, however.
I appreciate that.
I know. Okay. All right.
Sherry?
Yes. Who is it?
This is Nicole.
Yeah.
I do have just a few comments to say at some point. And also, I was just, That wasn't the agenda that I received, so just a point of order on that. What is the affiliates report about? When was that added?
I sent out this agenda. Let me see when I sent out.
8:21 a.m. yesterday.
Okay, yesterday.
I don't think that's the one I got, but thank you. Okay, so just include me as you go around, and we should start with Dan.
Okay. Rob, did you send it again?
It's just going out, Sherry.
Okay. All right. Dan, in the meantime, who would be the appropriate person to give us the update on the status of the remaining elections?
Me.
Okay. Could you do that then?
Yes. Would you like me to do that now?
Yes, I would.
Okay. So the elections continue to be a moving target because, as I indicated in the short memo I sent out last week, we have discovered that there was an apparent error by the National Elections Supervisor in counting the number of ballots turned in at WPFW. His conclusion was is that there were only about 1,100 ballots, which was short of quorum. And so for the last couple of months, everyone's been operating on that assumption, and it's caused quite a bit of consternation in Washington regarding who was going to be on the LSB and what would become of the people who ran for office this year, who many of whom wanted to be on the LSB. And it created actually quite a lot of unhappiness because the conclusion under the bylaws was that the sitting members would remain until the next election, which is 2 years off. And some of those persons had indicated by not running for re-election that they were not eager to remain on the LSB, but yet might be compelled to be on the LSB by way of the bylaws unless they chose to resign. Anyway, the WPFW LSB requested a look at the ballot.
I have an update on this, Dan, because he's going to basically report something that we thought was right that's not the case.
Okay,
oh, no.
Great.
All right, well, let me finish my sentence,
yes.
And then maybe Rob can correct me. So it's been reported that after actually looking at the number of ballots that were cast, that they were more than enough for quorum. Is that now?
No, that's not correct. What happened is we had been scrupulous to only let the League of Women Voters open the packet, and they apparently counted the ballots out into batches of 100. The president of the league from D.C. reported to us that she'd found 1,692 ballots. We were not with her when she did that because we didn't want to be accused of meddling in the process. She's an older lady, and it turns out she had read her own handwriting incorrectly. In fact, there were 1,069 ballots there. We just scanned all of the ballots with the people from True Ballot yesterday. And there were, in fact, 1,069 ballots. So there were not 1,600 ballots.
Okay.
Madam Chair, a point of personal privilege.
Yes.
Berg. I do have to leave this call now. I did, for those who didn't hear me, I will definitely be taking the minutes from the audio. I've taken the roll. May I please find out who came on just now?
This is Sarah Mary.
Sarah, thank you so much. And I will be doing these minutes. I also sent a list of motions passed that we passed in 320, and I list. And I also sent a list of the motions, the full text. It says text of the motions to be considered tonight, something
thank
like that. It says.
Great.
So
thank
I have
you.
Sent those out.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm sorry, but I could do nothing whatever about it. I tried.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye,
bye,
Mary.
Bye.
Goodbye, Mary.
Bye.
So, Rob?
Yes.
Am I right, then, that based upon scanning the ballots in, that you're able to count them?
Right. We're going to be, we've scanned the ballots, and somebody, a gentleman named Caleb Kleppner, is doing the tabulation. So what we're basically going to be doing is rank ordering the people by the number of the candidates that actually ran by the number of votes that they received. We have 10 candidates for 9 seats. So basically when we're done, we'll be able to announce the top 9 vote getters, and although we didn't reach quorum, what the PNB can do after the delegates whose terms expired but did not run for re-election have stepped down is to put the 9 top vote getting candidates who in fact ran into the seats in order of the votes that they received.
You mean that's what the LSB can do?
That's what the LSB will do, yes.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fine. I mean, that's kind of an unofficial process.
Exactly. Yes,
because you're not actually electing LSB members. You're using the number of votes as a criterion for deciding who to appoint to vacancies when and if they arise.
A point of information?
Yes, George.
How many vacancies are there?
There are 9 vacancies.
I see.
Can I ask a quick question?
What?
Have the people who, you know, since the bylaws say that how you do it, have all of the people been asked from the last year's expiring term people been asked if they wanted to stay on or not? I mean, I would think there might be one or two that would,
question.
And then you'd be following the bylaws and then using those ballots to appoint the other people.
Yes, we simply asked if the people who had not run for re-election would relinquish their claims to their seats, and at the last meeting, I was not actually present, but at the last meeting, they all agreed to do that.
But I think what Wendy is saying is that they had to be asked if they wanted to remain.
Right. Well, I think it's the same thing either way. I mean,
okay.
I don't know. Maybe it isn't.
We raised this issue with legal counsel, and the purpose of this was to be fair to the people that had run. 5 people who were on the LSB chose to run for re-election. 4 did not, and there were an additional 5 new candidates that ran. And the purpose of doing what we did was to give the people that ran an opportunity to be seated in the order of the ballots that they received. Sorry to take up so much time.
Okay,
let me flip. So that's a, all right, so we got all geared up about that, and now it's a never mind. But, okay, never mind. The BAI election is actually going forward. There have been positive developments in the last couple of days. Casey Peters came to KPFK yesterday and returned 2 computers, a scanner, and most importantly, the databases that are necessary in order to tabulate the WBAI ballots. That information has now been transmitted to Caleb Kleppner of an organization called True Ballot, who has been appointed as the acting national election supervisor, and Caleb will conduct the vote at WBAI on Monday, perhaps going over to Tuesday. There are some complicated but ultimately not very difficult issues regarding ballots and duplicate ballots, and I can explain them if people like, but Caleb has assured me that with the information that he has, he will be able to eliminate the ballots of persons not eligible to vote, eliminate the duplicate ballots of persons who cast more than one ballot, and make sure that ballots cast by staff members in the listener sponsor election are disqualified. And again, I can say more about that. But once that's done, hopefully WBAI will be completed and everyone will have confidence in the process sufficient to end the costly court challenges, which have created quite a lot of expense for Pacifica in New York. However, I must acknowledge that there remains a dispute. The persons who brought the Cohen case continue to insist that only ballots cast by November 16 and picked up out of the mailbox by November 19, as well as ballots cast by persons who requested duplicate ballots prior to November 16, be counted. Sounds like someone's doing dishes in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they could mute themselves. And the Pacific has taken the position, which thus far the court has endorsed, that all eligible persons be allowed to vote. So that may be a challenge that will not get resolved until the court ultimately rules, and the way in which the ballots are being counted by computer would allow us, if the court so ruled, to count only those ballots cast by a particular date.
Okay.
So assuming all that goes well on Monday and perhaps Tuesday, BAI will be done, at which point the remaining task will be the recount of the KPFK ballots, which remains to be scheduled. And frankly, I wanted to get BAI out of the way and get the materials from Casey Peters prior to working with the people on the election committee in Los Angeles to figure out how we do that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Point of information?
Yes, George?
Am I correct in recollecting one of your earlier emails that, in fact, there was a quorum by November 15th at BAI, or is that not true?
Yes. I don't think this is in my email, George, but it does appear that even if only the ballots cast by November 16 and or picked up out of the mailbox by November 19 are counted, that there would be a quorum.
Well, I may be asking you a question which you can't answer, but why was it miscounted the first time, and if not, why was it extended?
Okay, that's a complicated question. Or at least the answer is complicated. The question's simple. The answer is complicated. It was extended for several reasons, right? It was initially extended by Casey Peters because the ballots were mailed out late. And that was because he made an agreement with persons who put out a campaign mailing to delay the ballot until their mailing went out. And there were multiple problems with that mailing, which were not our problems, but which were the problems of the people who prepared the mailing. But nonetheless, the ballots were delayed in going out. This caused confusion in the announcements that were made over the air at WBAI in terms of when the deadline was. Then, the individuals, and I just call them for shorthand, the Cohen plaintiffs, went into court to obtain a court order delaying the election until the plaintiffs received duplicate ballots because they alleged that they had not received ballots. And that, I can explain why they didn't receive ballots if you want to know. But
no.
Okay. So the judge then issued an order which was apparently greater than what the plaintiffs had requested, because the judge's order said that the count should not take place until all eligible, these are the judge's words, all eligible voters had been given an opportunity to vote. So the result of the judge's order was that Casey Peters determined to further extend the date for return of ballots into January. And there were then further proceedings in the case where people continue to assert that they had not received ballots, even though they had, even though they were members, and in some cases alleged or asserted that they had made multiple requests for duplicate ballots. So in response to all of these requests and now three different court hearings, the date kept being extended, and the final announced date for coming to BAI and turning in a ballot by hand was March 14. So the ballots that remain, the ballots that we have are in various batches, organized by the date received, in boxes and so on, up until March 14. And there may even be a few remaining ballots in the P.O. box, which we're going to check on Monday morning prior to the vote to determine whether there are any stragglers in there that were postmarked by March 14, which then we will confer and determine how to deal with them. So that's the long answer, George. It's been a confusing process that's been complicated by decisions of the National Election Supervisor until his contract was terminated and by the court's orders.
I got it.
We can't. Oh, I guess you can say his contract was terminated. Somebody just came on the line.
Oh, this is Lisa. I just came on.
Hi, Lisa. Okay. Okay. I think that's the update on the elections then. Dan.
This is Bob.
Hi, Bob.
I would like to ask if we could extend for 5 minutes so that the WBAI directors could add some other pertinent information.
A second.
Is there any opposition to extending by 5 minutes? Okay. Bonnie, you're keeping time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
I think actually Nia wanted to speak first.
Nia? Well, okay, Nia, do you want to speak first? Okay, Bob? Is Nia there? Bob?
Okay. Sure. So I think Dan's given, a helpful summary so that we see that some of the problems that had existed have been dealt with, but there's been a myriad of extremely serious problems from the very, very beginning of these elections, and some of them are so severe as to really fatally compromise the fairness of the election. And there's just been a letter delivered to the PNB from an open letter to the PNB and to others from eight of the listener candidates from one of the slates, outlining in detail what those flaws have been. And it's both flaws on the part of the National and Local Election Supervisor in some serious errors of judgment that led to losing the chain of custody of the ballots when they were opened about a week and a half ago, and many, many other mistakes that that taint the election, as well as the really egregious violations of the Fair Campaign Code by one of the groups of candidates that's running, which were only partially remedied by rulings of the election supervisor, but which many of them have remained to this day unaddressed and have created this unfairness in that led to false information being given to voters in violation of the rules, and commercialization of the process by offering merchandise, a flashlight, to WBAI members in violation of the rules. And then finally, the long delays in getting replacement ballots to many people have actually led in the end, even though at the final call, many of them did receive those ballots in time to cast them, but there are still some that haven't, or some that became so confused and discouraged that they just gave up on the process. So there's some deep flaws here that need to be very carefully looked at for the future, but also questions to be raised about the election itself. And whether it can be considered a valid election.
Okay. Anybody else want to address this now? Okay.
Madam Chair, this is Sarb.
Hey, Sarb.
This is
Evelyn.
This is a question to
hey, Evelyn. Hi.
If they think that the election is not valid, what would be the remedy be now in their opinion?
What
the remedy would be in their opinion?
Well, I will tell you what's in the letter that you all have received, and you know you can read in detail for yourselves. But those eight candidates are saying that the only fair remedy would be to allow reballoting at the expense of the group of candidates and their backers from the so-called Alliance for Community Elections to bear the expense, since it was their violations of the Fair Campaign Code that caused many of the problems with these elections.
Thank you.
Are you sure you sent it to the PMB?
I didn't send it. It was sent by one of the candidates.
To the PMB?
Is
this an email or a real email?
An email a few minutes ago.
I have not. Let me see. I have not received it.
Nor have I.
Okay.
Bob, could somebody send it to me?
This is Nia, Sherry.
Yeah.
Maybe it's sent from activist Sarah Flounders. Maybe that's why people aren't recognizing it.
Sarah,
I think we're having problems with the PNB email.
Yeah, we didn't get it.
No.
Okay. So I think we should move on. If it arrived during the course of the meeting and we have the time to revisit it, and even if we get it now, we can't make a decision about it now on the phone. So I'm online. I'm looking for it. I'll let you know if it arrives in my mail. Because Dan's time is short, it's now 6:13. Dan, I think, with the permission of the board, that if you could comment on the motion for the directors, the protocols for directors' inspections before you leave, that would be helpful.
Okay. Well, Sherry emailed what I believe to have been the latest version of it to me yesterday, as well as some proposed changes that had been submitted by a member. And it seemed reasonable to me. I think that the framework should not be that difficult. I mean, the directors do have an absolute right to inspect the records, and I think everyone recognizes and supports that idea. There's no disagreement about it. The disagreement seemed to be about what reasonable process would consist of in terms of facilitating directors' inspections. And some persons have alleged that any limitation on process is a violation of the inspection rights, and others, and I think with the support of the law, point out that procedures should be implemented which allows Pacifica to conduct its other business in addition to its business other than facilitating directors' inspections. So the ideas that I think have a lot of agreement is that requests for inspection should be directed to either the PNB chair or the executive director, either of whom would work through the station managers to set up the inspections and allow them to go forward. One of the issues that has arisen is time and duration. And there had been a suggestion made that each individual inspection be limited to 2 to 3 hours, which I think makes some sense, again, because our stations don't have a lot of staff to spend time working with directors to make material available for inspection. And so there has to be some understanding that this has to be done for the mutual convenience, and I don't mean just convenience, but to make it possible for both the directors and staff members to carry out their responsibilities. So having a kind of general rule that there both be advance notice and that there be some limit on the duration sounds reasonable to me, again, subject to the notion that on a particular day or a particular week, staff may be able to accommodate 8 hours a day of director's inspection. But I think what we want to avoid is a kind of rigid situation where staff is required to ignore work that may have deadlines or other responsibilities attached and devote themselves entirely to director inspections.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Does everybody have a copy of the proposed motion that Rob circulated?
Point of information, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes, sir. I received at 5:51 p.m. from Mary Berger, our secretary, the text of the motion.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one? Is that the latest one?
I think Rob Robinson sent out an amended motion. Let me just see. Well, not quite yet. Maybe it is the one with Mary Berg. Let me just see what she sent.
She sent it to PNB.
I'm just waiting for it to open up on my machine here. Oh, God.
Sherry, I can verify.
I can read it.
Okay, Rob, would you do that?
The motion that I've sent out reads as follows. To ensure that inspections by directors exercising their rights are facilitated at times which are reasonable, directors will provide advance notice to the executive director and or the chair of the Pacifica National Board whenever any such inspections are to be carried out. The executive director or her, his designate will work with the director to schedule the inspection at a mutually convenient time within 1 week of the demand, except during a fund drive or other extraordinary circumstance that does not disrupt the business of the affected station or office. The coordinating committee will review the status of fulfillment of any such demands for inspection at the meeting that follows the inspection and will then make a report in writing to the PNB. The PNB requests that directors exercising their rights of inspection upon conclusion of such an inspection provide the PNB with a written report detailing the findings and conclusions of said inspections. And then we have a final paragraph that is related to it that reads, the PNB further directs the General Counsel to draft an appropriate procedure for notice to be given to Pacifica Foundation of any agent designated for purposes of a director's inspection and for the signing of a confidentiality agreement by any such agent.
No, that's not the one I have, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Rob, may I ask that you circulate that one to the PNB now so that those people who are online can also...
Yeah, I'll try to do that, Sherry, but the mail doesn't seem to be getting through. I don't know what the problem is.
Okay.
I got mine.
Did you get yours, Wendy?
Yeah, I got yours that you sent out at 7:52 or 8:52 p.m.
I didn't. Can you forward it, Wendy?
Sure.
Could you forward it to the full PNB, Wind?
Okay.
Thanks. And we're going to stay on this topic.
This is Ixia. I would point out that I am at the NFTV conference and do not have access.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Sophia. I just want everyone to know we're going to stay on this topic, but there is a letter here that was sent out at 6:13 from Serene Moore, Serene, and it's an open letter to Pacifica and the WBAI LSB. So, okay, we're back on. So who wants to motivate the motion now? Rob, do you want to?
Sure. There were a few concerns about the basic language that came out of the coordinating committee. In not that the language was unreasonable, but that we would have constant arguments. So where the language in the original motion said that inspections would generally be limited to 2 to 3 hours, we just struck that, and we added a language around what a mutually convenient time was that indicated that we would not necessarily be able to comply during station fund drives or extraordinary circumstances, but that generally a mutually convenient time would be within the period of a week. And then we also basically suggested we can't demand, but where people are requesting these inspections, we would like to hear from them of what conclusions and findings they made as a result of the inspection, so that the PNB is aware of what, you know, they believe the substance of the inspection revealed. And then we included the language, a separate paragraph, which asked our legal counsel to promulgate some language that would describe how the directors cannot, what they should do to identify agents that can basically conduct the inspections for them. So if a director is in Los Angeles and they're asking for an inspection to take place in D.C. and they identify somebody as an agent, we'd like there to be a clear process of how this is to take place, and we'd like to make sure that whoever that agent is, that before they have access to the records, that they sign a confidentiality agreement. So those are the fundamental matters which differ from the language of the coordinating committee. Thank you.
Okay. And I will... would someone like to speak either for...
Madam Chair, this is
yes.
Nicole.
Yes, Nicole.
May I ask a question, a couple of questions?
Yes.
Because we are having, I guess, an email breakdown because I didn't get this email or this motion. However, Rob...
Yes.
Could you, in general, what are the inspections usually about?
In
other words, what when you say, you know, inspections, what are we talking about? The public inspection file, what?
In the past, Nicole, the inspections have focused on expenditure documents, in other words, documents in the obligational trail where Pacifica or a station or an office was purchasing something. On occasion, however, the inspections have gone into different parts of the personnel process.
Okay. That's a little confusing with regard to purchasing, but and then with regard to verification of a designated agent, how would one go about that again, just quickly?
Well, we're simply saying that because what's happened in the past is directors have requested to exercise their inspection rights, then they send somebody else to do it for them. So,
and is there a place where the inspection rights are laid out? In other words, what are the parameters? What are the areas open for inspection? Or is it just everything is at any moment?
Dan?
All books and records of the foundation. That's a matter of state law.
California.
Right, that I know. But, I mean, we're talking here purchasing. That seems very, very small, very detailed.
Right.
You mean purchasing on a bigger, as a macro?
The inspections have requested looking at documents at all parts of the obligational process, as well as personnel documents. So it goes all across the spending spectrum. There have not been, as far as I know, detailed inspections around budgeting, but that could conceivably happen too. But there aren't any guidelines for what documents are and are not allowed, except for some personal information in people's personnel files that could be damaging.
Such as medical records and things like that.
Precisely.
Right.
Right.
And on a prior call, Nicole, the foundation counsel, whose name is actually Dan Siegel, said that, you know, he doesn't even think it's a good idea to have medical records in the files.
Right. And Domingo's taking care of that.
Okay. All right. Anybody
Domingo
else?
Domingo manages the personnel files.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
This is Doc.
Okay, Doc. Go ahead.
Well, just two things. One is my email is really messed up, and I'm really not getting a lot of stuff from the PNB.
Yeah, me too.
And it's like selective. It's not everything. It's just some stuff. So I don't know how to address that.
Well, Doc, may I speak to that out of turn? Just to say I'm trying to do a comprehensive search right now on exactly what our obligations with all these different servers and things like that. So I've called in a request for some paperwork, and I'm also pulling together other paperwork. We really have to take a comprehensive view of this.
Okay.
It involves a lot more.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The other thing is I'm trying to understand what Rob was saying, because I kind of got lost in, okay, if you ask for an inspection of purchasing records, do you look at everything, or are people just looking for a specific, can they just request specific stuff, or do they want to see the last 6 months, or, you know, Jennifer. Payroll,
well,
finance,
I don't think that Rob can answer what people are going to ask, but Dan can answer what they can
okay.
ask for.
Yes.
Right, Dan.
Because when
you know,
also personnel records, I get concerned about that
right.
also.
Right, Dan.
Well, you know, the reality.
Hello?
Excuse me just a second.
Hello? Okay.
No.
Okay.
I'll meet you there. Okay. Sorry. You know, the reality of it is, and people can disagree or not with the law, but the law basically says, look, the foundation is the employer. And the board is the leadership of the employer, so the rights of board members are really equal to or superior to that of any staff, HR person, general counsel, executive director, and so on. So the board really does have the legal right to look at all this stuff. It seems that where we have to balance it, because there are not cases that have actually addressed these issues, is when you get to areas where an individual may have a right to privacy under the California Constitution, and that clearly includes medical stuff, and it also includes personnel records. But the counterargument is that if anyone is allowed to look at those personnel records, then certainly board members are. As to what people are looking for, I mean, we've had all sorts of requests from, you know, I want to find out how much so-and-so charged for lunch last Friday when they used the foundation credit card, to I want to find out how much we've spent on stringers at a station over the last 2 years. I mean, people want to know all sorts of things.
And then the other side of my question would be, once that is accomplished, then what responsibility of confidentiality is the director held to?
Complete confidentiality. I mean, this is not for the purpose of writing a story in the newspaper or holding a press conference. It's to allow the board members to carry out their fiduciary duties to the foundation. So presumably, if a board member inspected the books and found something that they thought was improper, they would ask the chair to schedule a conversation of that matter at an executive session of the board.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan, I have a question. What if a designated agent has a conflict of interest, indirect or direct, with the foundation? And or the PNB and or any staff initiatives?
Well, the law does not tell us exactly what to do, but my advice in that situation would be to disallow that person from inspecting records and to defend any legal challenge that was made to that decision.
Okay.
This is Bob.
This is Lisa.
AC.
Okay, wait.
Lisa?
I got you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Bob? You know what? Just let me check with Dan. Dan, do you have to go?
Soon.
Okay. All right. Bob?
Yes, just to further answer Nicole's question, actually before Dan became our foundation counsel, this issue was posed to, some directors were doing inspections 3 years ago, and so the question was, you know, what to do, whether there were any exemptions to the documents that could be seen. And the counsel that Pacifica engaged at the time did lay out a very clear memo that said there could be conflicts of interest by directors. Now, he didn't include a reference to agents, but I think the logic would extend to agents of directors that would, exactly as Dan just said, would preclude them from being, that they should not be authorized to see certain documents that would put them in a conflict situation. And also that if there was a director who had an adverse legal role against the foundation, that similarly, that they shouldn't be allowed to see documents that would bear on the, you know, whatever legal case that they're part of against the foundation. So, you know, there are stipulations or modifications that mean that in some cases that right does not extend to every single document or facility in the foundation.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob. That's really helpful. Can I just ask one further question?
Point of information.
Wait, Nicole. George?
Yes. Could Bob send around whatever exists? I saw something, but it didn't. It was not at all that detailed about conflict of interest, about that was sent around by Jack. It was much smaller than that. And if that's already in our past motions, I'd like to see it.
I don't think he said it was in the past motions.
No. Correct.
It was a letter from Kevin Fink.
Okay. No, it was a letter from a different attorney.
Oh, a different one?
And I'd have to dig it up.
Okay, that's enough, Cross. Bob, if you would be kind enough to dig it up for George, that would be great.
This is Grace. I'd like to be on the stack.
Okay, Grace. So Lisa AC, and then Nicole, and then Grace.
And then George.
And
who?
George.
Somebody spoke after George.
Wendy, please.
Okay, great.
Actually, I missed a part of the question that Nicole asked that it might have been addressing my concerns. Did that have something to do with about agents or proxies performing inspections and what they can look at? Did you ask a question like that, Nicole?
I did, Lisa, yes.
Oh, okay, and that was answered. Because I would have issues with agents, because they are not directors, looking at certain confidential information, and I think that we really need to look at that and develop some kind of policy around that issue.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. AC, and then Nicole, Grace, George, and Wendy.
Yeah, I wonder if our attorney can look into the question of the criteria. I mean, what should be the criteria when a person, a director or an agent, whomever, would make a request to do an inspection. Seems to me that there should be some ground, some criteria for the ability of them to conduct an inspection. I mean, people come up with any kind of silly notion. The question is that shouldn't there be a criteria that or a director and or an agent to have before they are able to go through with an inspection, even though they have a right to do the inspection. I just want to know if there should be some criteria established.
Is your question directed to Dan, because there's a motion?
Yes, it is, Dan, yeah.
Okay, did you get a copy of the motion, Rob's motion, that actually established
it? But I don't think Rob's motion doesn't answer my question.
Okay, all right, Dan.
Well, you know, I continue to believe that the existing law does not allow Pacifica to make any evaluation of the kind of, if I understand AC's question correctly, does not allow us to evaluate the rationale for the inspection. Someone could just say, I'm curious.
Okay. Okay. Nicole, please.
Well, I share AC's question, and I share Lisa's question, and I was happy to hear George ask Bob, just because that was going to be one of my requests, George, as a follow-up question to Bob, was to send out any kind of parameters that have been set around criteria. I think this needs a lot more fleshing out, actually, a lot more thresholds and stated and criteria and definitions. That's just what I'm hearing.
I mean, we're bound by California law, and as Dan has said over the course of the last several meetings in discussing this, ultimately, I guess, somebody is going to challenge a restriction that we or another corporation, a nonprofit, puts on a director's right, and then the court will address it or put in a narrative, I guess, that answers many of our questions. But, okay, Grace, George, and Wendy.
Can I get back on the stack if there's more time? Lisa.
Bonnie, you're keeping time, right?
We are at 22 minutes on this.
And this was given how many minutes?
I'm sorry, 20.
Okay, so we're beyond time, and we're not going further unless I hear a motion to extend.
So I move for 10 more minutes.
Second.
Okay, is there any objection to extending for 10 minutes? Okay, hearing none. Grace?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, I would assume that director's inspections are often initiated based on concerns about possible malfeasance. As that is probably often the case, that there is some sort of suspicion that a director may have, it would be counterproductive in many instances to give prior warning. I mean, we wouldn't want to give prior warning to people we're inspecting at an airport because we think they may be terrorists, and we're going to do an especially thorough investigation on Tuesday and Thursday rather than the rest of the month. Also, the California Corporation Code seems to give more authority for directors' inspections to directors and less to for inspection rights to shareholders of at least 5%. In the aggregate of the outstanding voting shares of a corporation. Those stakeholders have to give a time and have to be scheduled, et cetera, et cetera. No such stipulation is made for directors. The other thing I think is that doing a particularly detailed financial investigation can take considerable time. And limiting it to 2 or 3 hours doesn't make any sense. I think that we need to be aware that directors have a fiduciary responsibility to the foundation and may need to exercise their rights to do an inspection. And that I don't know if it would stand up in court any kind of, or if it would be wise for us as board members to limit the authority that directors have been given by the California Corporation Code.
Grace, I'm just looking at the new motion that was sent around, and the time limit was removed from it for your information. Okay, next on the stack is George and Wendy, and then Lisa wanted to be back on the stack if time permits.
And also get on the stack is Joe.
Who?
Joe.
Okay, Jim.
I was going to make the first point that Grace just made about the wisdom of doing this, in that one of the ways of exercising your fiduciary responsibility as a director is to appear unnoticed at a station where you think there may be some problem and ask to see the books. And I think that's probably the intention of giving directors an absolute right to do that. The provision in this present motion for a week to arrange an inspection, that's plenty of time to, you know, let people know it's time to. I'm not saying this is happening, but I'm saying what the logic of having absolute inspections is, plenty of time for people to cook the books, replace one set with another, do what needs to be done to cover things up. I mean, that's I think clear in the reasoning for why you don't have restrictions on the rights of the people who are fundamentally, the bottom line, responsible for the integrity of the institution. I think one of the concerns is about the integrity of ourselves, that people are concerned about people using it inappropriately. Well, you know, we're sworn to confidentiality. And if we break that and if we misuse it, we can be thrown off the board for violating our fiduciary responsibility. I think until that time, we should regard each other as having integrity. So I think this is unwise to begin with. I think it's probably also illegal. I mean, I know the section, for instance, about requiring people to sign a confidentiality agreement. I just recently read something by a case brought by a fellow named Auerbach in California, where he was a director, and they asked him to sign a confidentiality agreement, and the court threw it out and said he can't be required to do that. And whether that's true of yourself or your agent, I mean, if you designate an agent, that means whatever they do, you're responsible for. So they're subject to the same restrictions you are. So I don't even think this is legal, and I'd like to hear some other opinions about it. But I certainly think it's unwise.
Okay. Thank you. Wendy?
Hi. So I just wanted to point out that, you know, that this inspection stuff has come up just three times in the last 4 years. And as Grace said, it really was about directors not feeling like they were getting all the answers to their questions. And it also was about objections from the staff at having to prepare reports. They didn't have time to do that. This whole director's inspection thing is about just, you know, you don't have to do anything. Just show me where the file cabinet is, and I'll do the work, you know. And it's, as I think we should be listening to Dan on this, I'm so sad that after so many hours that the PNB has spent on this year after year after year, that we're starting back on square one right now. I understand that Nicole hasn't been subjected to this and could use some explanation of what we're even talking about here. It doesn't happen that often, and it's when directors feel that they aren't getting the answers to their questions, and like Grace said, you know, the rumors fly in Pacifica, and as directors, we're responsible to prove them wrong. I think as now that we're moving into a time when we have a whole new leadership structure, not structure, but new leaders that, and we're offering our support and we can trust, you know, we're moving into a time of trust. I don't think that these inspections, anybody will be demanding inspections if they get answers to their questions, and I don't think they'll be asking as many questions as we try to rebuild this. Every time I participated in one director's inspection, and I was not in the city where it happened, so I designated an agent. And I'm telling you that I understood completely that if I had to pick that person very carefully, because if they did anything broke any confidentiality or anything, then it would be on me. This is in the law. It's in our own bylaws, repeated. It's for the protection of the foundation that those who are responsible for everything know what's going on in their organization. We learned in the Ken Freeland lawsuit that if you don't do any... Well, I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
Wait. So, this thing is coming up right now because someone tried to do it, and they had the support of the staff at the station where the inspection was happening. And so it's just odd that we're even having this discussion again. We don't need – well, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll
be done.
Thank you. The stack was Lisa and Joe. I'm going to let Joe speak first because Lisa has spoken already, and then Lisa.
And Bob.
Sherry, would it be all right if I'm excused?
Yes, Dan, you are excused. Have a great evening.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Bye, Dan.
Good
night. Okay, Joe, Lisa, and then Bob.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I actually had a question for Dan, but I'm thinking that maybe he can address it later. But I think it seems to me goes to whether or not this motion would override the existing law. Because if you're saying on the one hand the director's rights of inspection is absolute, then if, for example, I mean, you know, for the sake of argument, a director decides not to follow this procedure, what law is the director in conflict with? I mean, does this set of procedures supersede the law or not? I mean, it seems to me that's a central question. Mm-hmm. If it's a guideline for the way we should approach things, that's one thing. You know, how do we do things? You know, how is it done? And if you have some kind of guideline, I mean, that seems to me maybe not a problem. But if it's being presented as a barrier to entry, then it becomes a problem and possible conflict with the law. The other point I want to raise, I mean, I think certainly one way of looking at this is that a director may want to inspect the books because he thinks there's something, or he or she thinks there's something amiss, but the director may just want to inspect the books not because they suspect anything. I mean, if something did go awry and the director is held fiduciary responsible, not knowing what the problem was isn't an excuse. So you may want to go and just inspect the books to see what vendor they're using. You may, or not anything in particular. Turns out they're using a vendor that's overcharging them, you know, and maybe recommend that they use a different vendor in order to save the foundation money, that sort of thing. So I'm hoping that maybe somebody else can address the question of whether this, maybe the people moving the motion can address whether or not this set of procedures supersedes the law. What happens when it comes to conflict with the director's absolute rights? And that's something that we need to be clear about.
We're at 10 minutes.
This is Nia, yeah. Madam Chair.
Uh-huh. Okay, we're at time, folks.
Oh, I thought time was extended.
I couldn't hear one word you said.
We just hit the 10 minutes that we extended.
I heard you, Bond. Thanks. I'm sorry. Somebody spoke after you, and it was all choppy.